Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and welcome to an hour of mind power. Well, today we've got an open mic, and I've got so many odds and ends of goodies that I want to share with you today. And I also want to let you know you can call in at any time during this hour and chat with me. That's right. It's an open mic hour, so you can call in at any time, and I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. So if you'd like a psychic reading on the air, give me a buzz at 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Well, I wanted to start off with a little bit of thoughtful, insightful, if you will, perspective from a lady by the name of Julia Butterfly Hill. Now, you may or may not have heard of her. I was not familiar with her. However, you may remember a woman who sat up in a tree. It was a big redwood tree. Well, let me give you a little bit of history about Julia Butterfly Hill. She is an American activist and very, very much committed to saving the environment. She is known for living in a 180-foot-tall, 600-year-old California redwood tree for 738 days between December the 10th, 1997, and December the 18th, 1999. Can you imagine living in a tree for 738 days? Now, she lived in the tree, and she got the nickname of Luna. It was a derogatory title in the minds of many, many people, and it was that she was a little loony. But the truth is, she was so passionate about what she was doing, and she felt like she needed to prove that you could live in an environment, not hurt it, but she wanted to make a statement in her own way, and as so often it is depicted, people will do their demonstrations, and hers was quite effective. She was able to prevent loggers of the Pacific Lumber Company from cutting this giant redwood down. Now, because of this, she was presented the Courage of Conscience Award on October 31st, 2002. Now, she's authored some books about her experiences. Can you imagine? That probably were quite impressive. Her book is The Legacy of Luna, The Story of a Tree, a Woman, and the Struggle to Save the Redwoods, and One Makes a Difference is another book that she's done, Inspiring Actions that Change Our World. Now, this is something I wanted to share with you. It's something she wrote, and it was titled, You Being Me, Being You. And here is how it reads. You are a part of me, and I am a part of you. When one reaches out to another, then one transforms to two. But two is never separate from the one it was before. If anything, two is the possibility of one becoming more. And if there were no counting, no numbers to create a wall, when we looked in the face of one, we would see the face of all. Can you imagine what our world would be like if we chose to see every thought, word, and action through this lens, including the other-than-human relatives that we share this sacred planet with? The future is being created now. This woman made a difference. And many times you'll hear me on the show saying, the power of one is significant. One person doing one action affecting another person, and there is the ripple effect. It is amazing how that happens over and over again. And so many of us that are doing what we love, and maybe we're volunteering, maybe we're doing whatever it is that we're doing, and we will feel sometimes like what we do is not very significant. We're not up on the front page of the newspaper or a famous magazine, but you need to know that you are significant, that you do make a difference, and that you may make more a difference than what you even realize. So today, I just thought I would share that with you because this was one woman inspired to save a tree, a very ancient tree, and she succeeded. And she did it because she took an action. She didn't go to war. She didn't shoot anybody. She didn't have screaming tantrums. She did it in her own way and a manner that eventually achieved a level of recognition that should be an example for all of us. We can make a difference. And sometimes we do have to stand up for what we know is right. And we need to do it in a way. It doesn't have to be violent. You hear all of these stories about people and they're going out and they're shooting and they're doing all kinds of things. And it doesn't create the effect that they want. It doesn't create the result they want. Instead, it might inspire fear. So whenever you feel strongly about a certain action, remember, or a particular happening that's going on, proper action can be put into place effectively, often quietly, with results that are positive. But you do have to think it through. And you have to think about what the consequences could be. And then make the choice. And then follow through with the action. But it's up to each of us to take the personal positioning of responsibility for the choices that we made. She did. And it had a good result. The tree is still standing. Donna Sebo here. This is an open mic day. Later on in the show, I'll be giving you the lineup of my guests for next week. And of course, you know that it's going to be showing up on the BBS radio website. My newsletter will be going out in a few days. So you'll have the information about the upcoming guests and a lot of little goodies that are going to be included as well. And if you would like to receive my newsletter, all you have to do is send me an email to donna@delphiinternational.com, and I'll be glad to add you to the mailing list. In the interim, today is an open mic day. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Halloween, oh my goodness, what a wonderful holiday. I wanted to share a few tidbits about Halloween that I came across because I just think it's absolutely marvelous. When I was a kid, it was one of my favorite holidays because it was such a big deal. We had big things going on at the school, and everybody in the school got involved. The parents got involved. We had booths. We had games. We had the haunted house. We had all kinds of stuff. And, of course, everybody dressed up in costumes. It was a big event, and it was so colorful and so much fun, and so many delicious, delectable goodies were prepared. My husband brought home today, after a business meeting, a cupcake, and I had to chuckle because I was in the office working, and he said, you know, I didn't want to eat it, but I really think it's going to scare you when you look at it. And there was a young lady, apparently, at the business meeting that he went to that brought in for her dad, who was one of the people at the meeting, a whole bunch of cupcakes that she had made. And she made them in the shape of Frankenstein and all kinds of Halloween caricatures. And so Freeman, my husband, picked one. And I saw it just shortly before I came to do the show, and I was amazed. It was a wolf, and it had it was just absolutely fabulous. It's a work of art. He said he couldn't eat it because it was so well done, and he wanted me to see it. She even made the little white teeth in the open mouth of the wolf, and it had the tongue, and it had the red eyes, and it just fabulously done. She had just done this incredible cupcake selection for Halloween, and I'm always amazed at the ingenuity and the creativity of people. So hats off to this young lady who made these cupcakes, and it won't last I know the night it's going to be gone. The word Halloween, to the best of our knowledge, came about in the 16th century. And it was, of course, an adaptation of All Hallows' Eve. And Halloween was frequently used because they adapted the word. And it also is found in the form called All Hallows in Old English. And there's just so much that goes back to medieval days and time frames. And they had all kinds of celebrations that they did centuries ago. And, of course, the pumpkin is very much a part of it, and we all love it. And when I was walking my Scotties around the neighborhood today, I saw all kinds of imagination demonstrations with pumpkins and the faces and the different things that are going on because people are having parties and celebrating in our neighborhood. And it's just a wonderful holiday. And I love to see the imagination, again, that people demonstrate with this. Now, there's a lot of, what do I want to say, publications that really are associated with the Halloween holiday, like Frankenstein and Dracula. And, of course, you've got the autumn season symbols, the pumpkins again, and then you have corn stalks, and you have spiders, and werewolves, and black cats, and ghosts, and monsters, and all kinds of stuff that people love to bring up. Now, typically, this was always for the little kids. Kids would go from costume, you know, in costume, go house to house, and you ask for goodies. And, of course, the terminology was always trick-or-treat, and all of us are very, very much familiar with that. I know in many, many areas they're getting a little bit uptight with the teenagers coming out, and it's a bit old. They say for the young kids that's fine, but we don't want the older kids coming around. So the older kids often, if they depend on where they are, they might have special parties just for the bigger kids. But it's just so much fun. It really is a lot of fun. And the Scots and the Irish are the ones that really brought this holiday to North America in the 19th century. And the children, again, just absolutely loved it. And so I don't think it's any different today. I think they still have, you know, any excuse to wear a costume and to have a party is a good excuse, and kids love it. But adults love it, too. And so it's a good time just to get together for a lot of fellowship, which I know is going to be happening this weekend. Now, postcards, they were really a very, very special way of communicating in many, many different parts of the country. People loved them, and do you know that they have become collectibles? Yes, Halloween postcards. In fact, there is one editor that has over 3,000 vintage Halloween postcards. He said, these are the cards which mention the custom of trick-or-treating or show children in costumes at the doors, but as far as we can tell, they were printed after the 1920s and more likely even the 1930s. And the images of tricksters of various kinds are shown on these early postcards, but there's just this wonderful artistry that is there. And it really, he said, according to history, this person that has collected over 3,000 cards said it wasn't a widespread practice until the 1930s. That's when it really started coming up into popularity. Now, there are games that have been associated historically with Halloween, and I thought I'd share a few of those with you. One game, and I know you are aware of this, is dunking or apple bobbing. And typically, the old-fashioned way of doing it is having a huge tub filled with water. And the participants, well, you have to get the apples with your teeth. You have to remove the apple from the base of water itself. And then there's a variant of doing this, and that involves kneeling on a chair and holding a fork between your teeth and trying to drop the fork into an apple. That is a trick. That is really not easy to do. And then there's another game that they have for Halloween that's traditional. It's hanging up syrup-coated scones by strings, and you have to eat them without using your hands while they remain attached to the string. Can you imagine how messy that is? Probably want to do it out in the backyard somewhere where the birds could feast the next day. That would really, really be messy. But I'm sure there's some adaptations you could do with that one. And also, there are divination games that are played on Halloween. Now, there's a traditional Scottish form of divining one's future spouse, and that is to carve an apple in one long strip and then toss the peel over your shoulder. Doesn't make any difference which shoulder you use, the right or the left. The peel is believed to land in the shape of the first letter of the future spouse's name. That would be a fun game. Also, unmarried women were told that if they sat in a darkened room and gazed into a mirror on Halloween night, the future of their husband, or let me rephrase that, the face of their future husband would appear in the mirror. However, if they were destined to die before marriage, a skull would appear. I don't know whether you'd want to play that game or not. Anyway, it was a custom that actually was so popular on Halloween, and I've also heard that custom being done on New Year's as well. It was commemorated on greeting cards from the late 19th century and early 20th century. And of course, the telling of ghost stories, and you want to spook each other out. The viewing of horror films is a good way to do it. All of that is part of Halloween fare. And my goodness, have you been inundated as we have every time you get into the television shows and you're looking for programming? You've got this horror show and that horror show, and it's a gazillion of them anymore. So you got lots to watch, and a lot of stations are just having a field day. Also, there are certain foods that are associated with Halloween, and I came across something, two items, and I just couldn't believe that this was it. One is called a bonfire toffee. Now, I had no idea that this was a traditional thing, and it's also known as treacle toffee, plot toffee, or Tom Trot. Now, apparently, this is a very hard and brittle toffee, and it is in Europe especially associated with Halloween, so it's quite a treat. Now, at the time when this was made, candy was really, really a treat. It was nowhere as prolifically produced as it is today. So this is a little bit of history, because so often in today's world, we take so much for granted, we don't realize that in certain parts of history, certain patternings for food and candies and treats of different types were assigned to just certain times of the year because it was very, very expensive. Sugar was expensive. So they would improvise and do all kinds of things, depending on what part of the country we're talking about. Now, molasses was used in the United Kingdom as early as the 1600s. And, of course, gingerbread was one of the best ways to use molasses. But bonfire toffee, somebody figured out how to make it. And interestingly enough, this toffee was considered a medicine. That's right. It was considered a medicine at the time and was extremely expensive. So it wasn't made into a snack food. Now, the term toffee didn't really come into positioning where it was in print or used commonly until about 1825, although the recipe had been around for a long, long time. Now, in northern England, toffee was developed and had displaced some sweets that had been very popular before, like your candied fruits, your fruit preserves, your marmalades. And the reason that those were so popular is because sugar was a preservative. That's how you could keep fruits and other things around indefinitely. They would not spoil. And that is very important to remember. Now, toffee, by the 1800s, once the recipe had been perfected, was really popular. And it was made in all kinds of forms. Some of it was soft, and some of it was called toffee, because it was chewy and it stayed in your mouth for a while. But anyway, the toffee became quite popular in Yorkshire, England. And before it was commercialized, people would try to make it in their home. Now, in the 1840s, there started the industrial manufacturing of candies. And toffee was one of those that came out. And often, again, it was so expensive that only the wealthy could afford it. So when people were making the toffee, it was such a special treat. They tried to make it in sheets, and then they used what they called their toffee hammer. Now, a lot of people became very concerned about that because of sanitation. They said, this isn't such a good deal. But it was pretty common in their sweet shops. But in the late 20th century, they found that it was only available in the markets in October and November. However, today, it is available now year-round in specialty sweet shops, where usually it's broken by hand, and it is wrapped in paper. And it's purchased as a lollipop, and it's on a stick, and it has a foiled dish that it is attached to, and you can also buy it in sheets if you want. So it's usually very popular in the northern part of the United Kingdom, and they prefer their sweets there darker in color. So I thought that's just a little bit of trivia. What are the ingredients? Well, they may surprise you. Butter or margarine, molasses, sugar, and sometimes they use a white vinegar. Now, molasses apparently is the critical ingredient, for it's less sweet than white sugar, and it has a little bit of a bitter flavor that gives this toffee a very, very unique taste. Now, I do have a girlfriend that makes toffee, and I'll tell you what, there's no way that's bitter. It's one of the most delicious candies I have ever eaten. It took her years to get the recipe perfected, so it turns out the way that she wants it. And when she makes it, it comes out chewy, and she has almonds in it. But that's just a little bit of trivia. Also, there is another tradition with Halloween, and again, this is an Irish tradition, and of course this is a next-door neighbor of the English, and it's called Barn Breck. That's right. Now, it's spelled B-A-R-M-B-R-A-C-K. Now, I've never heard of this, but this is a yeasted bread that is made with sultanas and raisins, and usually it's sold in flattened round. You toast it, you have it with butter, and you have it in afternoon tea. And it's a sweeter dough, but it's not as rich in sweetness like a cake would be. And the sultanas and raisins, well, they add a flavor and texture. And it is extremely popular. So this is something that was the center of the Irish Halloween custom. And what they did with this bread, they would put various objects into the bread before it was baked. And it was part of a fortune-telling game. That's right. And the Barn Breck contained these items: a pea, a stick, a piece of cloth, a small coin, originally a silver sixpence, and a ring. Now, each item, when you got it, and your particular slice of bread was supposed to carry a meaning to the person that received it. If you got a pea in your piece of bread, that means that you would not marry that year. If you got a stick to beat one's wife with, don't you like that description? Well, that meant you were going to have an unhappy marriage or be involved with a lot of disputes. If you got a piece of cloth or rag, you'd have bad luck or be poor. If you got a coin, you were going to enjoy a good fortune or be rich. And the ring, that meant you were going to be wed within the year. Now, you could vary your items in it. Some people like to put in a medallion, usually of the Virgin Mary, to symbolize going into the priesthood or becoming a nun, although this tradition isn't done today. People don't want to do that. So today, this Irish bread, Barn Breck, well, you can buy it in stores, and they do have one item they put in, and that is a toy ring. So just a little bit of trivia regarding the Halloween holiday. And I also want to thank those of you who are sending me such wonderful stories that I really am enjoying. I got a story from a gentleman by the name of Guy Finley, and he's well known as an author, And he said, Donna, feel free to use any of these stories whenever you like. But he had a story about being in an airport, and this is in, you know, Kerrville, Texas. Or no, excuse me, it happened in Dallas. I beg your pardon. And he said he was at the Dallas airport in a particular terminal when something unusual began to unfold around him. He said it began with a gate agent waving a small American flag, then another gate agent waving another flag, and then he said there was another and another and another until dozens of people appeared from nowhere and surprised passengers who were waiting to get on this flight turned to follow the gaze of the flag-waving agents. And he said, within just minutes, all of us were standing. And from somewhere and everywhere, the applause began as we watched as a plane load of American soldiers as they returned home from across a glass-walled walkway that leads to U.S. Customs and on to that place each of these soldiers would call home. He said, when it was time for us to board our flight, a list of standbys appeared on the screen. Now, we're platinum-level flyers with American Airlines and suspected that even though we were ticketed coach, there'd be a good chance we were going to be bumped to first class. We weren't, and it was a good thing. First one and then another BDU-dressed soldiers were called to the counter. Both came away with smiles as wide as the desert. Good job, American Airlines. Later, upon landing in Seattle, the flight attendant added this to the usual announcements. To our men and women in uniform, we say thank you for your service and welcome home. And Guy said, if you aren't serving personally, then be sure you are serving those who serve. And as long as there is an America, I pray that when you visit a city council meeting, wherever you are, you'll hear the words, I pledge allegiance and God bless our troops. And he said, according to the American Pulse survey by Big Research, 61.8% of Americans think the U.S. is a declining international power, and 24.4% say that Stephen Colbert's testimony before Congress was enlightening. So I want to just share that with you. That was an email that I received. Donna Siebel here. This is an open mic hour. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. I have a bit of a unique story for you. I've got some recipes coming up, but before I do that, let me let you know about my guests that are going to be coming up next week. We're going to be talking about a book called Gone Away by Jeffrey Allen. I don't often do fiction publications, but wow, have I gotten some fabulous ones, and this one is, it's very different. So we're going to be talking with Jeffrey about that on Monday, and then we're going to be talking about 15-minute diabetic meals with Nancy Hughes on Tuesday. History's Mysteries, Brian Houghton. This is a man that loves to do his research, and we're going to be talking about that. It's going to be a delight. Tragedy in Sedona with Connie Joy. Well, this is going to be about a story that occurred not too long ago and some insightful perspective about the actual event, because this woman knew a lot about the persons involved in it. And then Beyond Reason, Greg Corbon, a physician, is going to be giving some insights and information regarding, well, items I think you're going to find very interesting. So all of this and more is going to be up on the BBS radio website, and all you have to do is check as of Monday, and you'll find out about all the wonderful people that are coming up to be guests, including musicians. We're going to really have some awesome people this month, as I think we usually do, and you are more than welcome to review everyone and all of the details on bbsradio.com, Station 1. Check out the Donna Siebel Show, and you'll find out about all the wonderful people that are coming up on the programming. Meanwhile, we're going to take a break. When we come back, well, I think you're going to enjoy some of the stories that I have to share. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Okay, give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. You know, sometimes I get to be so efficient that I actually lose my place in what I've planned to talk about. And that is what has happened right at this moment. And I had a spooky story that I wanted to share with you, and I'm going to do it right now. Yes, it's about Charles Dickens. And he was such an author. I mean, he could do stories in a way and manner that was incredible. And on October 31st of 1873, there was a story, The Mystery of Edwin Drood. Have you ever read it? I hadn't. Charles Dickens wrote it, and it appeared all over in bookstores here in the United States. Now, the first 6 chapters of this book he wrote while he was alive. The last 6 chapters were written after he was dead. Interested in the rest of the story? I was, and I'll share it with you. This is what happened. There is a famous mystery writer, Wilkie Collins, who had challenged his friend Charles Dickens to try the new genre. The novel was serialized in 12 monthly installments by a magazine, which was published in Britain. Then it was sent over here to the United States. Now, this was the very first time that Dickens had done this in his writing career. He had insisted on a contract stating that his heirs would receive royalties if he should die. This man planned ahead. Dickens passed away halfway through writing this fascinating story. 3 years passed, and in Vermont, a young man by the name of Thomas James had moved into a boarding house owned by a woman who was an active spiritualist. In October 1872, after attending a number of seances in this lady's home, James declared he had been contacted by the spirit of Charles Dickens, who wanted James to let himself be used by Dickens to finish The Mystery of Edwin Drood. How would you feel if that happened to you? Think about that. Well, the landlady gave James free room and board until the book was complete. Now, there were a lot of witnesses that were aware in these seances that this young man would go into long trances and write just so fast. Remember, they didn't have tape recorders then, nor did they have typewriters that he could use. And he declared that Dickens was dictating the information to him. Now, when the word got out, this young man was attacked vehemently by all kinds of publications who did not think the book would ever appear, nor would the story ever be finished. But it did. And it was attributed to the spirit pen of Charles Dickens. Now, there was a lot of controversy about this. The authenticity of the mystery solution circulated among many scholars, and each argued their particular position on this based on clues found in the working notes left behind by Dickens and the vignettes on the cover of the monthly installments. Arthur Conan Doyle, familiar name? Yes, the author of Sherlock Holmes, and he himself was an ardent spiritualist. He investigated this case himself, and he felt that James did not have the mental agility to complete the novel without help. Well, if it's being dictated to you, he doesn't have to have the mentality for it. It's coming through him. We call it channeling today. How did that all turn out? It got published, and that is the reality. So if ever you want to look up something interesting, look up The Mystery of Edwin Drood. Good stuff. Of course, any of Charles Dickens' works is a good thing to read on Halloween. Ah, yes. Isn't it fun when you think about all of the things that you can do? Well, have fun with it. It's really something that can be totally, totally pleasurable. One of the things I love to do is to ask about ghost stories or ghost experiences that people have, which brings something to mind. If you have had a particular paranormal experience, I want you to send me your story. Why? Because I'm collecting. I'd like to collect 100 stories, and I'd like for yours to be one of them. Send it to me through email, donna@delphiinternational.com, so that we can put it in a book. What I would like to do is publish these stories so that people can know that if they're having experiences, they don't need to be afraid of them. They need to understand and be educated about them. It makes all the difference in the world. When you understand what's happening to you, then it takes away the fear. Then you can educate yourself, and you can maybe become aware of the fact that your psychic abilities might be operating in a way that's very unique to you. Education and understanding are the keys to becoming successful. Fear, ignorance, and superstition are your three greatest enemies. When you face those components with understanding and knowledge, you'll win the war of fear every time. Just a couple of points of trivia. I know so many of you are going to be baking and cooking and doing things. I discovered a tip with baking, and I've been baking for a lot of years, that I didn't even give any consideration to. You know how when you are beating a batter with a mix and it can be a real sticky situation? Well, if you'll spritz the beaters with your cooking spray before putting them in the sticky batter, they won't adhere to the beaters and will mix more evenly. I had never thought of that. Good tip. Makes the blending a lot more efficient. And think of that when you're beating something by hand or if you're going to use some mixers. I think that's a great tip. Also, if you're like me and you've got some plants outside, if you've ever lost plants to frost, here in the Pacific Northwest, our temps are dropping quite a bit, and I don't know what part of the country you're listening in from, but here is a tip that was passed along to me, and it's a good way to use old umbrellas. Maybe you throw them away. If you're like us, we have a plethora of them because we always seem to need them. They're in the car, they're everywhere, because in the Pacific Northwest, we're always floating in rain at one time or another. However, I would never have considered this in a million years. This is a suggestion about when an umbrella falls apart, don't throw it away. Because if you have an early frost that's coming in and you're advised about it, if you take your umbrella and open it up and insert the handle into the soil next to the plant, it shields plants from the damaging effects of frost. That's an early frost especially. And I thought, that's not a bad idea. Stop and think about it. It enables that barrier of air and keeping the temps from affecting the plant so strongly. And we've already had temps, not quite down where the frost is, but in certain areas of Washington that people are already having it. So just a little thought there that I thought you might enjoy. Also, what I wanted to say to you is if you are interested in some information regarding upcoming appearances, that'll be appearing in the newsletter in November that's going to be coming out next week. So if you'd like to subscribe, just let me know. Just send me an email. And people have been asking me if I am doing private appointments, and of course I do. That's something I do all the time. So if you want to reach me for any reason, call my office at 800-872-8852. That's the best way to reach me if you're interested in doing that. Now, I've got some odds and ends of information, but what I also wanted to share with you, and I know we're going to be going on break in just a short period of time, was a story about a puppy that has touched the lives of over 15,000 people. Really something. But I'll do that after we come back from the break. But I do want to emphasize, please take care of your pets and keep them safe. In our neighborhood here, we have had a number of postings, and it's all with small dogs. These haven't been big dogs. It was a miniature poodle type of a dog. There was another one that was a miniature pincher, just precious, precious little dogs, and even a cat. And they'd gotten out of their yards. None of these animals have had collars put on them. And I was sitting in a vet's office just a couple of days ago with our Scotty Kinsey because she had to go in for some medical treatment. And I was talking with a young lady that had this adorable little dog and didn't have a collar on. Now, she had been microchipped, but this lady said, oh, I carry my little dog with me, and we were discussing this. I said, please put a collar on your dog, because if for any reason something gets she gets away, I said, I had a very dear friend whose dog, she's 6 years old, and she always carried her. This dog didn't have a chip in it, did not have a collar. She was the sweetest little thing, all of about 4 pounds. The woman always took her to work. And 6 months ago, somebody left a door open at her office, and her dog got out. Someone did see the dog, but there is a forested area out behind where the offices are, and the dog hasn't been seen since. So when I was talking to this young lady, I said, that dog is gone. With little dogs, people would just pick them up and they'll take them. She said, I know. I've seen it happen. She said, I saw someone pick up a dog, throw the collar that was on the dog out the window, and they drove away. This is in her neighborhood. So things happen. Be aware of your animals. With Halloween coming up, there's going to be all kinds of commotion. There's going to be all kinds of stuff going on. So maybe it'd be a good idea to make sure you have a closed door policy. If your animals have doggy doors during the hours when their trick-or-treaters are there, keep the doggy doors closed. Keep the animals inside. Because sometimes people are rambunctious, or they do things, or they open gates, or they do all kinds of stuff. Take care of your animals, please. Also, remember to put a collar on your animal. There are so many people that don't have collars on their animals. You need to do that. Your identification tags need to be there. And don't forget, lost pets are 4 times more likely to be returned if they have a tag. Now, there is a website called petplace.com, and you can find out information about what you can do to take care of your pet from there. And don't forget, have one of those microchips. It doesn't hurt the animal. It really doesn't. And if they're picked up, sort of like a pet GPS, somebody will find them. This is the time to be prudent. Not unlike the 4th of July. Be aware of your pets. Take care of them. This is Donna. We'll be coming back in just a moment. And I'll be sharing with you a story about a puppy that touched 15,000 hearts. We'll be right back.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown-red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Well, there was a woman by the name of Janet, and she was given a diagnosis of breast cancer. When this happened, Janet, instead of being real upset over this, said, you know what, we need to get our son a dog. Her husband, Rich, was surprised. He knew that this was a special decision, and so consequently, they decided to look for an animal. Well, their son, Michael, had wanted a pet for a real, real long time, and he would do all kinds of things to satisfy his desire, the little boy would, to get a dog. At 7, he decided he'd make a PowerPoint presentation that he called his dog, and Janet kept putting it off because she just didn't want to take on the responsibility of a dog. We all know as moms, we end up taking care of the animals frequently. However, when she was diagnosed with breast cancer, she said, we need to have a dog because it's going to help both me as well as my son. I want my son to be able to focus on something. It's going to keep him optimistic, not focus on the fact that his mom is sick. So she said she couldn't think of anything better as an antidote to the strain and stress going through cancer therapy than getting a puppy. So her husband said, on Michael's 12th birthday, you are going to be getting a puppy soon. Well, the whole family was really excited, and they ended up having in their family a new addition. It was a four-month-old red-haired toy poodle that Michael named Huck. And he was just absolutely adorable. The whole family was thrilled. Now, Huck ended up being left after a while, after the family had had him for a while, with the sister of Janet, who was the mom. And the little boy knew the whole family was going to be going on vacation, so he said, that's okay, you're going to be in a safe place. But Huck did something that dogs are known to do, and he dug his way out of Janet's sister's yard. And, of course, he took off. Well, the vacation was cut short. The whole family ended up going back, and they said, this is something we really, really are just very concerned about, and of course Janet's sister was absolutely devastated over what had occurred. They put posters everywhere, and the little boy, Michael, he said, I'll use whatever I can as a reward. And there was someone else in the family who said, I will use my money for a reward. And the temperatures at home started really dropping. Now, the dog, Huck, was only about 9 pounds. Little guy. And everybody was concerned because temperatures were dropping down to freezing. The word went out, and in their town, whose population was close to 15,000, they were all involved. Everybody got the word on this dog. So there were people that were keeping their eyes open. The word went out via email, posters. The story of Huck was really significant to this entire community. Janet said it amazed her. She didn't realize that people in the community would be that open and that enthusiastic about one boy's little dog. But they were. One woman called them because they put their phone number on all the posters, and she said, I've seen your dog. Well, Michael got very excited about that. He said, that means our dog is alive. Even with the freezing temperatures, he's still around. So they kept looking. Now, after 72 hours, they hadn't found him. But all of a sudden, Huck appeared on their front porch, and he appeared no more worse for wear. Well, Michael was just thrilled, but Janet made sure that she was going to recognize all the people in her community. So she wrote the story about Huck, and she said, it's the remarkable true story of how one lost puppy taught a family and a whole town about hope and happy endings. And she dedicated it to the town because she said all of these people were sincerely concerned, and it made a difference. She said, today I am cancer-free. Huck has been in our lives, and it's been such a blessing to us. She said, who would have thought that 9 pounds of dog, my son's best friend, my mascot for victory, could make strangers open their hearts and show us all the power of faith. Stories about people like Janet and others are so significant because we never know how we're going to touch someone else. Again, there it is, the power of one. And the power of one is a little dog, 9 pounds, that touched the lives of so many people. Donna Sebo here, open line at 888-815-9756 if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. I've got something here about sweet cinnamon fritter fries, and these are made with cereal. And as I'm watching my clock here, because I know we've got just a little bit of time left, sometimes we want something that's just a little sweet that's not going to be adding a lot of calories and goes with a good hot cup of tea or coffee. Well, this is something that I think you might enjoy. All you need is 1 cup of Fiber One brand cereal, 1/4 cup of your favorite sugar, non-sugar sweetener, and 1 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, 1/8 teaspoon of salt, 1/3 cup of fat-free liquid egg substitute, 1/2 teaspoon of vanilla extract, and you need a butternut squash, about 2 pounds in weight, and 1/2 cup of sugar-free pancake syrup. And this is what you're going to need. You preheat your oven to 400 degrees, place your cereal in a blender or food processor, with your sugar substitute, cinnamon and salt. You grind it until it becomes bread-like. Transfer it to a medium bowl, set it aside, and then combine your egg substitute with vanilla in a large bowl. Cut your squash in half. Carefully peel it with a vegetable peeler or knife. And cut the squash lengthwise. Remove the seeds. And cut the squash into French fry shapes to equal about 4 cups. Pat them with paper towels so that they're nice and dry. Coat your baking sheet with cooking spray. Toss the squash in your egg mixture until it's all covered. One by one, shake to remove the stuff that's on it. Coat it with a crumb mixture and lay it flat on the baking sheet. Bake it 10 minutes. Flip them. Bake another 10 minutes. It'll be crispy on the outside tender on the inside, and serve it with syrup for dipping. Mmm, yum. Not many calories either per serving. Serves three people, only 144 calories. This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Have an absolutely magnificent Halloween. We'll be back here same time, same place, right here on Monday. We're going to be talking about Gone Away. Be safe, be happy, have fun. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.